10 years ago this weekend, President Obama strode to a podium in the East Room of the White House and said this.
Tonight, I can report to the American people and to the world that the United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda.
Bin Laden was killed by Navy SEALs who raided his compound in Pakistan on May 2, 2011. His death ended a manhunt that had started a decade earlier after Al-Qaeda carried out the 9/11 attacks that killed almost 3,000 Americans. We want to reflect on that history, but also consider Al-Qaeda today with Colin Clark. He directs policy and research at the Soufan Group, a security and intelligence consulting firm. Colin, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks for having me.
Colin, I want to start with that moment 10 years ago, President Obama announcing that American forces had killed Osama bin Laden. What do you remember about hearing that news?
I remember it like it was yesterday. In fact, I had just returned from Afghanistan, where I spent 3 months working for General H.R. McMaster on combined joint interagency task force Shafafiyat, looking at the nexus of Taliban insurgents and drug traffickers in Afghanistan and trying to wrap our arms around the whole nature of corruption and how that was fueling the insurgency. And I remember thinking, as I was home back in the U.S. for several days, optimistic and thinking that, you know, we were turning a corner in Afghanistan finally.
Sure. General McMaster, of course, would go on to become a national security advisor in the next administration. What happened afterwards, Colin? I mean, Osama bin Laden is no longer directing attacks, of course, but does he remain a symbolic figure for extremists?
Very much so. I mean, the image of bin Laden as a charismatic jihadi leader continues to resonate with tens of thousands of committed jihadis throughout the world. We see him constantly evoked in jihadi propaganda. The really interesting thing is he's actually transcended violent extremist groups and is even worshipped in some ways by white supremacists, which is an interesting twist. They've used him as well in their own propaganda. And so he's this kind of modern day Che Guevara, if you will, where he's kind of seen as this anti-authority figure, but also someone that was able to lead a transnational terrorist group and stand up to the most powerful country in the world.
So that's kind of the big picture of his influence, but there was sort of a vacuum of leadership at Al-Qaeda specifically. So what does that group look like today?
Yeah, so Al-Qaeda is led today by its longtime deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri. You know, this is someone that lacks bin Laden's charisma, and we can see that in his speeches, his audio tapes. He comes across as very pedantic, you know, very kind of old school, boring. And you know, that's impacted Al-Qaeda's ability to recruit, particularly among the younger generation. We know that they've been eclipsed by the Islamic State in many regions throughout the world. That said, Al-Qaeda has changed tacks and they've allowed the Islamic State to kind of bear the brunt of Western counterterrorism efforts over these past 6 years. And Al-Qaeda has focused mostly on building political legitimacy at local levels. And in that regard, it's been quite effective.
You mentioned that the Islamic State had eclipsed Al-Qaeda, which is quite a thing to say. Of course, there was the famous characterization of ISIS as a JV team at one point. Do they remain a bigger threat today than Al-Qaeda, do you think?
I think it depends where you look throughout the world. It's hard to talk about these groups as monoliths. We do see a resurgence of both ISIS and Al-Qaeda linked groups in sub-Saharan Africa right now, not only in the Sahel, but also in parts of the southeastern Swahili coast. We see these groups kind of rearing their heads in the Horn of Africa as well. And many people, myself included, are quite concerned about what happens next pending a U.S. troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. Does South Asia once again become a magnet for jihadis and foreign terrorist fighters to flock to?
Well, let's talk about that withdrawal. I mean, just to review the history a little bit, I mean, the U.S. invaded Afghanistan because that's where Al-Qaeda had planned the 9/11 attacks, and bin Laden had shelter there because the Taliban controlled Afghanistan at the time and refused to extradite him. He evaded American forces. It took a decade to track him down and kill him, as we just mentioned. But now the U.S. is ending the war in Afghanistan, and President Biden recently said troops would withdraw by the 20th anniversary of 9/11 this fall. Now, the Taliban that once protected bin Laden is still a powerful presence in Afghanistan. So, Colin, what is its relationship today with al-Qaeda as the U.S. prepares to exit?
Well, the relationship today is no different than it was 20 years ago. And so many people are concerned that in the wake of a U.S. withdrawal, we could see the Taliban come to dominate Afghanistan militarily. And accordingly, they're going to provide safe haven and sanctuary to al-Qaeda to regenerate its network, not only throughout Afghanistan, but throughout the region more broadly. I'd just like to say one thing about President Biden choosing September 11th, 2021, as the last day, right, that U.S. troops would be in that country. I think there was 364 better options. I really just don't understand why he would choose such a symbolic day. I think in many ways it gives a public relations victory to our adversaries, and I think it's going to boost morale among jihadis in the region.
Well, I mean, in that vein, where do you think al-Qaeda fits in the bigger picture of extremist groups at this point? I mean, do they still have the kind of clout to be a threat, either on this 20th anniversary, as you seem concerned about, or on the other 364 days?
You know, al-Qaeda's ability to plan and conduct external operations or launch spectacular attacks along the lines of a 9/11 or even the East Africa embassy bombings that we saw in 1998 or the USS Cole bombing in Yemen, I think that that capability has been reduced significantly, and that's a good thing. However, if we want to look at the terrorism landscape writ large, what we're looking at now, 20 years after the start of the global war on terrorism, is an extremely diverse terrorism landscape. Not only do we have to deal with jihadi groups like al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, but we're now looking at a range of violent white supremacist organizations, neo-Nazis, and a whole plethora of domestic violent extremists here in the United States that are emboldened by what happened on January 6th with the Capitol insurrection.
Right, the sort of number one example of how this notion of what terrorism can look like has perhaps broadened. And as you say, we are coming up on the 20th anniversary of what then-President George W. Bush labeled the war on terror. And I wonder if you could just step back for us, Colin, and kind of assess the results of that war and how it changed American foreign policy, maybe domestic policy to some degree, as you mentioned, white supremacists in our own borders. But, I mean, it's cost us so much, you know, in blood and treasure. And I have to wonder whether, to some degree, we'd have to concede that bin Laden got a little bit of what he wanted when he attacked America on 9/11, based on the way we've responded. What do you think about that?
I think there's no question. I completely agree with that. I mean, part of the point was to lure the United States into Afghanistan and then pursue a strategy of attrition, you know, death by a thousand paper cuts, if you will. Because bin Laden, and he's, you know, this isn't us speculating, this is us reading primary source documents and listening to what he said, believed that the United States was weak, that it was a paper tiger. He referenced 1983 in Lebanon. He referenced Somalia, Mogadishu in the early 1990s, so-called Black Hawk Down incident. And he believed that the United States would withdraw if hit hard enough. And, you know, that's essentially kind of what we're seeing now after 20 years. It would be, I think, disingenuous for me to say that the result of the war on terrorism resembles anything close to a win for us. It's cost us tremendously. We've built a worldwide architecture, counterterrorism architecture to deal with the threat. And now, you know, if you look at some of the numbers, there are estimates that suggest al-Qaeda has between 30 and 40,000 fighters under arms worldwide. So even while core al-Qaeda has been reduced, bin Laden has been eliminated, many of the other senior leaders within al-Qaeda have been eliminated. What my colleague Ali Soufan calls bin Ladenism, the ideology that underpins Salafi jihadism worldwide, remains extremely popular and is going to continue motivating people to conduct acts of terrorism.
Yeah, it's a sobering reality as we come up on 20 years. Colin Clark is director of policy and research at the Soufan Group. He's also the author of After the Caliphate, The Islamic State and the Future Terrorist Diaspora. Colin, thank you.
Thanks for having me.